Let's plant a garden out in the yard. Let's work together and it won't be that hard. Everybody!
Continuing through all the areas of our outdoor living space, we're going to move into the gardens now. We've got a great planting season, a great variety of vegetables that can go in the ground. Are you still planting your own garden or kind of let that go by the wayside?
Oh, no, I still, I've there's just two of us, so I've gone to more containers and raised bed stuff. But, yep, still doing it. Now's the time to, you know, to start planting all those things that we eat the roots of, the stems of, the leaves of. So there's a lot of different stuff you can plant right now, and it's a long season, which is kind of neat. You know, you can do things in stages, especially if there's only two of you, you know, where you can plant, you know, a little batch of spinach and maybe some spring mix or some kind of lettuce and maybe some onions and then kind of repeat that in a few weeks. So you've got some stuff coming on, you know, periodically through the season instead of having it all ready at one time.
Now, when you're planting and you're row spacing and row gardening and you're poking little holes for the seeds and you're dropping them in, and it tells you to put a couple seeds in each hole, is that just because not every seed is guaranteed to germinate, or does it make a multi-trunk vegetable stronger, or what?
Well, I think, yeah, not every seed does germinate, for sure. I think it's always easier to plant more and then, go back and thin once they've germinated. But
seeds are so cheap, that's easy to do. I just have a hard time thinning. I'm like, oh, these nice little plants. But then if you don't, they don't get big enough because they're all competing.
Or they get real lanky and stretchy. And yeah, so you kind of hit the nail on the head. You know, package a seed, you know, $1.50 to maybe $2, you know, for in most cases, more seed in a package of seed than you're going to use in, you know, maybe a couple of seasons. So one little trick that I learned, from my dad was to take seed and put it in you can use a jar, you can use a coffee can, you can use a lot of different things, and then put some fine potting soil or some sand and put it in that jar with it and shake it all up good. And then the seed gets kind of intermixed with all of that little bit of soil. So then when you go down your row, that material that you've mixed the seed with is acting as a carrier. So it's helping spread the seed out as opposed to just trying to take straight seed and put it in that little furrow or that little trench you maybe made and get it spaced out the right way. If you mix that seed with some good fine potting soil or some sand and then just shake it out, you can even poke holes in the lid of your can or jar and put it on that way. That will actually space your seed out, makes that thinning job a lot easier, or maybe not necessary at all. So just a little trick.
And there's I'm trying to think of the exact name. A gardener that ran a nursery in Tucson I knew a while back said something. He had a special term for it where it was partner planting, where if you plant
companion
this—
companion planting?
Maybe that's it.
Okay.
Talk through that theory.
Well, you know, so some certain plants do grow better if they are with other plants, and certain plants don't do well if they're together. And you know, so you might plant, for instance, the concept there is maybe you plant something tall, like a row of sweet peas or beans or pole beans, and that might cause some shade down on one side of it that you could plant something that might need a little or do better with a little afternoon shade. So, you know, or you plant things that are low around. You know, you got tomato plants and peppers that get bigger. You could plant things that are lower around them. So if you're with limited space, particularly, where that, you know, can kind of come into play. Also planting things that might help attract pollinators with your garden. So, planting some flowering things in with your vegetables might draw some bees and pollinators to the garden that will then get in there and help things pollinate. So there's a lot of things that you can do, and I think it looks kind of cool to have an old-fashioned kind of a mixed garden rather than, you know, something that looks like a commercial farm. That's nice too, but in a backyard setting, you might be looking for something that's aesthetics as well as, you know, practical.
Have your landscape and eat it too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And container gardens have come. It seems like we hardly ever talk about somebody calling trying to do a row garden anymore. I can't remember the last caller we took on setting up a row garden. It's always been, you know, pots.
Well,
or
you know, it you know, size of our new subdivision lots and the way we live is different. People don't have the space. They don't have the time to do that as well, and so it's maybe not as practical to do it that way anymore. So container gardening is a, you know, great, especially if you live in, today you see all these high-rise living situations and balconies and patios. Doesn't mean you can't grow vegetables. Almost anything you can grow in the ground, you can grow in a container if you have the right location and the right size container to grow it in.
I do like how those patio gardens on a lot of the new residential high-rises really soften up the skyscraper.
They've done a great job with some of them, with even hanging gardens and ground covers hanging out and hanging down over the edge of the balconies. And yeah, they're pretty cool, pretty neat.
I can't remember where I was, but I went by an intersection I hadn't been through in, you know, 5 or 6 years, and I don't even remember what was there anymore, but just this huge, massive, residential apartment, mm-hmm, with that type of look, and I thought, mm-hmm, you know, that does a really good job of mirroring the urban city, and you know, not feeling like, or at least to me, like you're in the middle of a downtown.
Especially with what's happened this last 6 months, when people have been cooped up inside a little more than they'd like to have been, to have at least some green space, even if it's right off the edge of your balcony or patio, I'm sure it was very, very comforting and very important.
And it doesn't have to be a brand new building to do that. The ASU campus, West Campus or East Campus by Falcon Airfield, they did a really good job converting that campus to
the one by the old Williams Airfield, you mean?
Maybe that's
Polytechnic,
what it is. Yeah.
Campus? Okay.
They did a really nice job converting that old campus airfield to that style of, I don't know what you call that type of landscape architecture infused with housing. There's Don Ryden's probably, yeah, screaming at his radio right now.
Well, you know, they've been very creative with using certain materials too. They used old recycled concrete to make walkways out of broken concrete pieces, and you know, the gabion walls, the walls inside the wire frames. To use that kind of Frank Lloyd Wright, Taliesin, earthy, ergonomic-looking architecture and landscape features is, I think, very pleasing to the eye.
And you get a nice combination of low water use and your desert plant on that campus. They did the engineers and the landscape architects did a really nice job on that, and I'm sure they still do tours out there. That's how I got to see the campus. I don't know with the shutdowns right now, but if you're looking for inspiration, that's a great place. Botanical gardens are a great place. The water treatment plant on Scottsdale's
McDonald
facility,
and Hayden. Mm-hmm.
That's another, yep, really nice place to go see this type of landscape design.
Right, and the use of, you know, structures and different types of structures to create shade and not be obtrusive. It did a nice job, but yeah, I think there's just more and more thought going into the way we design things now, as far as living space and green space combined. That, you know, need that. You look at, you know, I saw watching a program the other day with, you know, New York City and just Central Park. You know, I mean, the fact that they thought enough to reserve that space, so people had a place to go. That's how important having some green open space is somewhere. Even if it's not off your balcony, you can walk a short distance or it's accessible to you to get into nature. So it makes a big difference.
And we're talking about bringing that nature into your backyard, whether it's a lawn, a tree, a garden, or a certain design feature that you mirror with it. And it always comes back to water. And we've got a fifth Saturday this month here in October on Halloween weekend. We're going to be talking about the scary topic of water and how it really isn't so scary when you really start crunching the numbers. And I bring that up just because anytime we talk about doing a lawn or you know, planting a tree that's not a native, you get those diehard naturalists that, you know, we shouldn't plant anything here that's not native. You shouldn't have a lawn. You shouldn't grow tomatoes because they're not native. I'm like, that's extremely extreme. But we've done, as the state of Arizona, a great job in water resource management and development. When you start really looking at the infrastructure of the waterways and CAP and SRP and the groundwater, it's pretty impressive, and the advancement in agriculture and their water efficiency.
We use roughly the same amount of water now as we did in the 1950s.
And the census in the 1950s of...
And the population
I think it was a half a million yet.
I don't know, but you know it's exponential.
It wasn't 7 million.
Comparatively, right. So Phoenix is now the fifth or sixth largest city in the United States. And it wasn't in 1950, I'm sure. Let alone what, you know, Mesa and Yuma and Tucson and everybody's grown. So... We're very efficient. Farming is very efficient. They have to continue to work on it, though, because as more and more people move here, you know, we keep having hurricanes in Louisiana and fires in California. People are going to keep moving to Arizona, I think. You know, there will be continued strain on the supply, and we need to plan. So, there's enough to do what you need to do, but there's not enough to waste. So I think continuously coming up with new technologies is a great idea.
And the amount of times we use the water before, you know, it gets down, a lot of your golf courses or, you know, that water that you see out there, it's treated water that's already been used once or cycled through the system. And really, when you think about it, all water is recycled. But
well, it's a renewable resource. I mean, eventually it gets, you know, it goes into the ground and gets in the water table, or it evaporates into this, you know, into the atmosphere and
comes down as
rain somewhere. So, yeah, it's just you want to conserve as much of it as you can.
So we'll have a great broadcast coming up at the end of the month with all the different big players in the Arizona's water industry, CAP, SRP, some new technologies that we're going to highlight as it relates, and of course the ag department on the water use here in the desert. We've got one more segment coming up here at Rosie on the House here in our Outdoor Living Hour with Jay Harper of the Farm's Choice.